Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Free agency always sounds more exciting than the reality of what it is. When we see the list of free agent names, we all get excited. But before long, franchise tags, they get applied to many of the top players. Once some of those top names are removed, what's left? In some cases, players hit free agency for a reason. Sometimes it's declining performance. Other times, a player is nearing an age when a likely drop-off doesn't fit well with a long-term deal. However, we have exceptions, always exceptions. This year, we may have a number of players still in their prime that are on the market. Many of those cases will be in the running back market. Now, for years, many teams have shied away from paying running backs. We've also seen teams regret paying running backs soon after they did on that second contract. Here's what I want you to know. In the last 10 years, these are the top running backs on teams that won the Super Bowl. Isaiah Pacheco, Cam Akers, Leonard Fournette, Damian Williams, Sony Michel, LeGarrette Blount, and C.J. Anderson. None of those was paid more than 1.2% of their team's salary cap. We'll find out in the next week how teams value their free agent running back class. Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. Jim Coventry and Anthony Servino with you. Now, we'll be doing this podcast on this platform every Monday until July. Remember to follow Anthony at The Real NFL Guru. You can find me over at Jim Coventry NFL. Now, in today's show, we will do the following. We're going to give an overview of the salary cap situation for key teams, and then we're going to break down the top free agents at the skill positions with possible landing spots. Anthony Servino, before we begin, the opening statement I made when I mentioned each of the last 10 Super Bowl winners had a running back costing 1.2% or less of the team salary cap. Is that something that contending teams will be thinking about when they see this free agent running back market?
I mean, yes and no, because we see teams like the 49ers, who we believe are perennial contenders, they go out and go get a Christian McCaffrey because they believe he's the piece that puts them over the top. And in theory, he really should have. And then if you look at this upcoming free agent class at the running back position, I don't really see anybody breaking the bank because there is a slew of big name running backs hitting the open market at once. So it's not like there's one big name and then a bunch of guys. There's quite a few big names. So if any of these guys think they're going to go out here and break the bank in free agency, they might be waiting until that second wave to get a deal done.
And the second wave is always interesting because there are bargain basement deals always available. Now, note everybody, this show is recorded 11 a.m. Eastern on Monday, March 4th. So again, take note because there are going to be moves made that may change some of the content we talk about in this show. And also, don't forget, although free agency technically begins on Wednesday, March 13th at 4 p.m. Eastern, the legal tampering period is Monday, March 11th. So what does that mean? We're going to have breaking free agent news on March 11th. Also, this show, again, being recorded early, teams have until March 5th at 4 p.m. Eastern to apply franchise tags to current free agents. And then as free agents begin to agree on deals beginning on March 11th, I'll be doing short video breakdowns on RotoWire X and RotoWire NFLX, and I'll repost them. So be sure to be on the lookout for those. Anthony Servino, let's talk about the salary cap. Now, what's weird this year, I notice, is we have more teams than ever in a positive salary cap situation. Matter of fact, half of the teams in the league have at least $29 million in cap space. Nothing we've seen. And it's not the recent $30 million bump. Teams were already in good shape ahead of that. I'm going to highlight two teams that are in the upper class of money, and we'll go one at a time and just give kind of some quick hits on what they could potentially do with some of their salary cap dollars. And these are contending teams. Let's start with the Texans. The Texans are $70 million under the cap. Their defense got really good pieces, but they lack a lot. And on offense, obviously, C.J. Stroud was Superman last year. What are your thoughts on the Texans with $70 million in cap space?
You know, the Texans can go in a lot of different directions, but the one thing that sticks out to me with the Houston Texans is the aforementioned running back position. I believe Singletary is a free agent. We know Damian Pierce, he's probably just a guy at this point. Saquon Barkley, there was a rumor going around that that is his desired landing spot. And if you look at some of their pieces, like, yeah, you have to pay Nico Collins. You got Tank Dell on a rookie deal. You got your quarterback on a rookie deal. The offensive line, I like it a lot. So are the Texans a team that they're going to go try to break the bank a little bit on a guy like Saquon Barkley? Because I think that was the missing piece, that running back dynamic. Like, yeah, Devin Singletary was nice, but Saquon Barkley is a big-time upgrade in that offense. And I think he would be a big-time upgrade in January if you believe the Texans are going to be there. And if there's the same team moving forward as that we saw this year, then you have to believe they're going to be a contending team moving forward.
Now, what I also think here is $70 million in cap space. Now, I understand Patrick Mahomes wins the Super Bowl, and he is on a big contract. But many teams with cheap quarterbacks, look at the 49ers last year. You could put a team of the Avengers basically around a quarterback. But in this case, it's not Brock Purdy. It's C.J. Stroud. And with these next couple of years, while Stroud stays cheap, they have a real opportunity to make a run at Kansas City by loading up a roster. So I'll be interested to see what they do. But I really do believe they do have a top corner. They have potentially a top edge rusher in Will Anderson. But you could continue to bolster the corner or edge rush market and really make a bigger dip. One more team in the upper class of money. The Lions have $52 million. And look, if it's me, their defense, they tried to address the cornerback position. Some guys got injured, didn't really work out. Offensively, they seem in great shape. I want to hear what you think about the Lions at $52 million.
You know, the Lions are a team that were knocking at the door of a Super Bowl. And for them to now hit this offseason, hit the open market with all of this cap space, you have to think they're going to look at themselves in the mirror and say, okay, what do we need the most? What do we need to upgrade? And the glaring needs probably in a defensive backfield, probably a cornerback. And yeah, the offense is really nice. Do they go out and get another wide receiver? I get that Jameson Williams is coming on a little bit, but they're really using him as a gadget. And if you go back to that postseason game, Josh Reynolds had a couple of key drops. You need better than Josh Reynolds if you're going to go out there and beat a team like the 49ers. So is the wide receiver position something they go out and address?
You know, it's interesting because what we've seen from Ben Johnson, the offensive coordinator, and a lot of people have him as God's next gift. Understand, he has found an offense where it works in the middle of the field. That's where Jared Goff is effective. Jared Goff is not a very good perimeter passer, right? And maybe why they've had to use Jameson Williams in a gadget role, possibly. And then you've got the running backs. You've got Gibbs. You got Monty. You got Amon-Ra St. Brown in the slot. Sam Laporta, all middle of the field pieces with that great line. And we'll find out over time. Now, Ben Johnson's back, which is great for this offense. But like you said, if they do bring in a game changer on the outside, even though defenses will be able to deal with Goff a bit, if with all the weapons they have, you might be right. That might be the key to unlock them. So that'll be a real interesting way to see how the Lions approach this. Now, a couple teams that I would not call the middle class of cap space between 29 and 48 million. We're going to talk about two of these teams. We're going to start with the Bengals. The Bengals are 48 million under the cap. It looks like the plan is, and we'll talk later about T. Higgins, but the expectation is they will retain him in some manner. 48 million, they could clear more space. Like you say it off air, the salary cap is kind of a myth. Teams can always move money. The Bengals with 48 million with Joe Burrow and a defense that fell off last year. What could they potentially do to upgrade their team and give the Chiefs a run?
We already know a healthy Bengals team could give the Kansas City Chiefs a run. We've seen it. The big key, obviously, getting Joe Burrow back healthy for a duration of the season. Now, we saw them address T. Higgins. They're going to tag him. So some of that money is going to go in that direction. Tyler Boyd's also a free agent. And this is a team that has run three deep at the wide receiver position for all these years. And this is another team offensively. They could potentially bring in a wide receiver. And if not a wide receiver, possibly a more competent tight end. Because that's been the position they've tried to address, and it really hasn't worked out in Cincinnati.
Oh, my, good call. We'll talk later, but it comes to mind, Hunter Henry would be a great fit for them. Mm. I'd love to see that, but we'll talk more about the individual free agents later. And then the Jaguars are in that middle zone. They have $29 million in cap space. I think they're like 16th or 17th in the league or so in cap money. So it's not a big amount of money. If they really wanted, again, make more money, they definitely could do that. Are the Jaguars kind of in purgatory at $29 million? Do you think there's anything they make a run at that might help their chances?
I don't know if they're in purgatory, but I also don't know who or what the Jaguars are at this point, because we've seen a tale of two different teams. And last year, like a lot of us, including myself, had the Jaguars making this deep run. They take a step back and we see the Texans almost, you know, really leap over them. So what do the Jacksonville Jaguars need to do? I think their biggest need is the offensive line. You got to protect Trevor Lawrence. And that should be the big time priority going into this offseason.
You know, really, their biggest move should have been getting rid of their offensive coordinator, Press Taylor. But apparently that wasn't going to happen. Not going to happen. And I really think I was doing my research, and the Jaguars were near the bottom of the league in play action and in pre-snap motion. And those are two incredible numbers that give the quarterback a lot of pre-snap information. They weren't doing Lawrence any favors, but we won't spend more time on that. We'll move on to a couple more teams. Now, teams that are right around the cap, the Ravens are $12 million under, so basically they're close to even. You're not going to make a ton of moves as it is with $12 million. And I know people would like to put running backs in their direction. Their organization is one that doesn't seem to me like one's going to pop money, real money on a running back, but we'll see what the market bears. What do you think the Ravens could do with a little bit of cap money?
Again, another team. I feel like when you look at Lamar Jackson, I think I said it, you know, when we did the playoffs and we were talking about the Ravens getting eliminated and what we saw going to the offseason, I had mentioned that the big narrative was, well, this is the most weapons, it's the most talent Lamar Jackson has ever had. But then if you really look at the talent around him, outside of like Zay Flowers and Mark Andrews, what do they really have around him? Like OBJ, he's not coming back. And the wide receivers, Aguilar, Bateman's, but you need more weapons if you're going to go and beat teams like Kansas City. Like, and I get it, Kansas City, they don't have a ton of weapons, but you have the best quarterback since Tom Brady. They don't need it to go and beat these teams, to go and beat like a team like, I don't know. I know they dominate the 49ers, but let's say you face them in the Super Bowl. You need to score points. I think they need more, certainly at the running back position. You got two on the roster, Gus Edwards, J.K. Dobbins, who's been unreliable. They're both free agent. You said it yourself. What the hell are they doing giving Justice Hill the football in the postseason? They need to address the running back position and go get a better wide receiver opposite Zay Flowers.
That would be the optimal move because, again, you're competing with the Chiefs and you've got to find a way to take them down. You're in the AFC, very little margin for error. And then very quickly, the Chiefs have $3 million in cap space and they are tagging L'Jarius Sneed, so that could already put them underneath. And then we know Chris Jones is expected to get a big contract to stay there. So outside of those two moves probably put the Chiefs well over the cap. So is there anything other than a bargain basement flyer at receiver that they might go after?
You know, I don't know what they can do with the offensive line because it was good. It wasn't great. And I think that could use a little bit of an upgrade, but of course what they need is going to cost them a lot of money. So probably the cheap wide receiver, you know, they already let MBS go. You need to bring somebody in or maybe draft one, but yeah, that salary cap puts them kind of in a bind when you got to pay Sneed or Jones. I know it'd be great to ideally have them both back, but that's just not going to happen.
Last thing we'll talk about on the salary cap are two teams who are in the worst shape of the whole NFL. The Dolphins are $31 million over the cap. We heard Christian Wilkins, great defensive end, probably not coming back. They're going to have a lot of cap casualties. Players are not going to be able to bring back. Players are going to have to get rid of. This is not a team in build mode right now. And Tua is still playing under a cheap deal. And they're talking about trying to pay him, which that's another story for another day. So the Dolphins were a challenger for a while last year, but they really fell off in the second half. What do you make of this team now that they have to like get rid of people and then be over the cap as well?
No, Miami is a team that we could potentially see take a little bit of a step back because of the salary cap. And if you want to clear some space up to bring in anything new, you're going to have to renegotiate or release players. So Miami, you know, is this a team, again, we're going to be talking about running backs a lot because it's a crowded running back market. Is this a team that they want to pair a Devon Achain up with something other than Mostert? Because I get it, like, and taking a fantasy football spin into this, I know the season Mostert has kind of reminds me of Jamal Williams with the Lions. I would tread very lightly going into this draft season.
Oh my gosh, great call on that. One more team. The Bills are $41 million over the cap. We already know Gabe Davis isn't coming back. No big deal, honestly. We don't know what the deal with Stephon Diggs is going to be. It seems, you know, 50-50 at best that he comes back. But what we saw from week six on, he didn't have a 90-yard game at that point. But with them being significantly over the cap, them still being a clear step behind the Chiefs, is this window closing quickly, or are they going to be able to regroup and figure out a way to bolster their roster despite being the team with the worst salary cap situation in the NFL?
Does the window ever really close when you have a guy like Josh Allen at quarterback? And let's be real here. It's not like he had world beaters at wide receiver outside of Stephon Diggs. And truthfully, they've been winning games and playing better football when Stephon Diggs hasn't been the feature. And it was more, you know, Josh Allen getting a job done with his legs. And if you're betting his touchdown props, you cashed a lot of those down the stretch. They got the tight ends involved. Khalil Shakir's coming up. You know, Davis won a lot of games catchless. So I don't think that's going to be a big-time loss. I think they can get it done by trying to find a value at wide receiver, and there could be some out there.
It's just so hard to talk about the AFC when you got the boogeyman, a Patrick Mahomes, sitting off to the side. You could talk about winning, but until you can get past Patrick Mahomes, unfortunately, it seems to be a pipe dream. But hey, I guess the Chiefs can't win every year. Maybe, maybe not. Hey, we'll take a short break, and when we return, we're going to break down the top free agents and some possible landing spots.
It's done.
Connor!
Goal of the year,
Panarin!
Part of the past, the celebrations forgotten, the history,
Vegas Golden Knights.
History,
win.
We're back to a blank slate, clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Well, that brings us to the quarterbacks. So we have five quarterbacks on the market. Realistically, two are starting options. The other three, part-timers at best. We're going to start out with the big name on the market, and that would be Kirk Cousins. Now, Cousins will be 36 years old starting the season. And I know there are people talking about his Achilles injury. Look, Achilles injuries sap explosiveness. Kirk Cousins is a pocket passer. He has two seasons more than 125 rushing yards. Even if he loses any explosiveness he had, it does not matter in my mind to his game and what he does. Now, in his 5 years with Minnesota, he's averaged about 30 touchdowns and 10 interceptions. But before going down with the Achilles last year, he was on a path to have career-shattering numbers. And, of course, Justin Jefferson went down. TJ Hockenson will probably miss the first month plus of the season. But that said, let's just stick with Kirk Cousins alone. What are your thoughts on Kirk Cousins going into free agency, and where might you see him possibly landing?
You know, Kirk Cousins should be one of the more coveted quarterbacks. And I know Justin Fields is getting all of the buzz right now because he correlates with the number one overall pick and possibly Caleb Williams. But Kirk Cousins going into free agency is going to be big because it could potentially change the geography of a team like the Vikings if they lose him. We also hear rumors, people are connecting Justin Fields to Atlanta. And then we also seeing rumors out there that the Atlanta Falcons are hot and heavy on Kirk Cousins. I've always believed the Falcons have been a quarterback away for a while, under the radar, top five or six offensive line. The defense is certainly improving. They spent all of this elite draft capital on the skill position players. You need to go get a quarterback. If this is a team that is going to win now and they believe they can win now, considering the division they play in, I think I'm going to stop screwing around and make a big-time push for Kirk.
So what is the probability in your mind, since Minnesota, they have the advantage because they can negotiate longer. Now, Cousins has been a great businessman. He has played his contracts out extremely well. Do the Vikings have an advantage of being the front runner, or is just Cousins going to just wait, follow the money?
At this juncture of his career, right, like, is there a world where Kirk Cousins say, you know what, I've made a lot of money. I want to go try to compete and win a Super Bowl. And would I take maybe a tad less to go do that? That could also be a play for Kirk Cousins, depending on where he thinks these teams are in terms of winning a Super Bowl. If it's between staying in Minnesota and going to Atlanta, which roster is better? Which is the better fit for him?
Exactly. Teams that I'm a wild card team that I could see in the mix here. The Raiders. I don't know if they will, but Antonio Pierce really brought some life to the defense. They still have Davante Adams and Jacoby Myers on offense. They have a decent set of tackles for the offensive line. It would be an interesting spot to see if the Raiders were able to work with the cap and make a splash. I think that's a wild card team to look at. I know you mentioned Denver is a good possibility. It'll be interesting to see where this falls, even New England if the opportunity arises. But again, Kirk Cousins will be the biggest piece in the quarterback market. The next player is Baker Mayfield. Now, the Bucs are seemingly aggressively trying to sign him and work with him. And they just brought Mike Evans back for 2 years. So that tells me they're going to put a heavy emphasis on Mayfield. Now, Mayfield already is going to be 29, Anthony, to start the season. He had his career year this past year with the Bucs. 28 touchdowns, 10 picks. He threw for over 4,000 yards. Now, one thing, the pass protection was very good. I believe that Dave Canales, the offensive coordinator who is now gone to the Panthers, was a perfect fit for him. Didn't do as much play action as I thought, but really did a good job of stretching the field to Evans and then other times getting the ball out quickly to multiple weapons. But again, for Mayfield, it was all about having Evans and Godwin. Now, we know Mayfield has been on four teams over the last 3 years. Is he just going back to Tampa, or is there a chance he finds hits the open market?
I think the best bet for Baker is probably going back to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, where you did find a lot of success. Plus, they're bringing back Mike Evans, who you certainly have a connection with. Like, what's the market out there for Baker Mayfield? Like, is he a guy who's really going to go out there, test the market, and go break the bank? This kind of reminds me of, like, the Daniel Jones situation a little bit, where, you know, your best money is going to be to stay put.
100% on that. And look, the league kind of thinks of Baker Mayfield as maybe it was like a one-hit wonder he had last year. And I know way back in his early time with Cleveland, before he destroyed his shoulder at last year he was there, he did put up decent numbers. But for the most part, I think he's seen as a backup level who had a good season. And so I think that's going to give the Buccaneers a big advantage. I'm a little worried about Baker Mayfield this year for fantasy, because I do think into a way he had a career year last year. And I think if defenses do a better job of you're working against Mike Evans, trying to take him away. They did a little bit. The teams did a little bit in the second half of the season. Not in the playoffs, that didn't happen. But again, I still think Mayfield, like you think, ends up in Tampa. But I think it may not be as good of a year as he had last year, but that's to be seen. Ryan Tannehill, this will be a short conversation. He'll be 36. In his last 3 years, his touchdown interception ratio is 38 touchdowns, 27 picks. He's missed 12 games the last 2 years. Now, as late as 2021, he was a rushing threat for touchdowns. He had a three-year window that ended in 2021 when he had 18 rushing touchdowns, but he only has three scores on the ground in his last 22 games. So he's no longer the mobile threat he was. He's aging. He really needed a play-action-based run offense to have success. Hasn't really been on a pass-first team. Will anybody look for Ryan Tannehill?
Yeah, anybody who knows me knows my answer here. First, I want to bridge it this way. A lot of people have Pittsburgh and Justin Fields married up. To me, it doesn't feel like a Rooney or a Steelers move. Ryan Tannehill certainly feels like a Steelers move, and you got his guy Arthur Smith there as well.
When you mention Arthur Smith, here's the thing of beauty with Tannehill. Now, again, he was 3 years younger. But they would run the play-action game with Derrick Henry, you know, obviously collecting the attention of the defense. And it was A.J. Brown who put up some really big numbers. But A.J. Brown never had more than, I believe, 106 targets when he was with the Titans. And if you put Ryan Tannehill into this Pittsburgh scenario, we know they have a run game. We know they can use play-action. George Pickens. That could be a really good connection. And we've already seen it. George Pickens on in-breakers. Think of A.J. Brown, in-breakers, taking him to the house, running by, over, or through people. George Pickens doesn't have A.J. Brown-level talent, but he could do some of those things and create those big explosive plays. So I do think if Ryan Tannehill can still function in the play-action game, I do think it's a great opportunity. Any final words on that?
Yeah, and like the last year's edition of Ryan Tannehill, I think he has more juice than what he's shown us. Like last year's Titans team, if you remember, I believe PFF had the Titans offensive line ranked dead last or pretty damn close to it. So this wasn't the Titans teams of old, but with a 26-year-old Derrick Henry in a top 10 offensive line. So and the receivers, they were a mess outside of Hopkins. So this situation in Pittsburgh, you bring in Tannehill, get better on the offensive line. The skill position players are there. The defense is there. I think that's an under-the-radar, really good move for Pittsburgh.
I would think you could get Tannehill for $17 million or less. I would think you could get him for that. I would have to think at 36 years old, there's not going to be a bustling market for him. I think he's going to have to take bridge starter money at best. And I don't think he's in a position of strength here with all the missed time. So this might be a great buying opportunity for a team that's seeking his services. Again, we think Pittsburgh is a great move.
And that's a team that's winning games, remember, with Mason Rudolph and Kenny Pitt. Like, Tannehill's an upgrade over them. I don't care what anybody says. He's an upgrade over what they've had since Ben Roethlisberger.
100% and a definite upgrade, believe it or not. Ryan Tannehill for some teams like the Steelers, upgrade. All right, let's go to the running back position. So as of now, as we're saying, we're recording this March 4th, started at 11 a.m. Eastern. Saquon Barkley, it's possible that the Giants do decide to put another tag on him. That could be done in the next, you know, day and a half or so if they go that route. It seems possible that Barkley hits the open market. A few things about Barkley before we talk about him. Now, he's only missed four games over the last 2 years. Earlier in his career, he was missing time. He had a three-year window where he missed 22 games, but again, mostly durable the last 2 years. Now, he'll be 27 this year. And because of all the missed time, he only has about 1,200 career carries, about 300 receptions, and that's over 6 years. So he does not have a lot of mileage on his tires. And then you might look at Barkley's numbers. Oh man, last 3 years, he has 4.07 yards per carry. That's not really like earth shattering. But remember this, the line of the Giants was so bad. And last year was as bad as it gets. And then Barkley only had 6.3 yards per reception the last 3 years. We think of him as a great receiver after the catch. But a lot of the problems he faces, Brian Daboll has been there, is that really he was the only threat. So defenses didn't worry about the passing game. They just locked down on Barkley. So I think there's a lot of undetermined about what Barkley is at this point. Last thing I'll point out, Anthony, now I didn't like Barkley's broken tackle rate last year. It was only 34th percentile. Now, after he got hit, his yards after contact was good. He was in the 70th percentile, but again, as a receiver, only 12th percentile yards after the catch. But like I said, that could be due to defenses making him public enemy number one and, you know, throwing the house at him. So where are we at with Barkley, and where could you see him ending up?
Barkley could really go anywhere he wants. And to start off with the New York Giants, I don't see why they would bring Saquon back. I get he's really all they had offensively, but isn't that the problem? Like, by time this team ever is potentially in a position to win, Saquon Barkley is going to be either retired or way on the back end of his career. So why pay a running back? It makes absolutely zero sense. And for Saquon Barkley, like, you've been bogged down. Like, how good could Saquon Barkley be if he was with a team like Philly or Dallas and those offensive lines? Like he could have been one of the more prolific backs in NFL history. Instead, he's really, really, really good with nothing really to work with. So, like, Saquon, I think he should have his pick of where to go and staying within the NFC East. Like why wouldn't you want to go play with the Dallas or Philly? And we know that there's a need certainly at both spots with DeAndre Swift hitting the free agency market, Pollard. They didn't tag him there. We already mentioned the Houston Texans as well. So I think either one of those three teams would be a terrific landing spot for Saquon.
If Barkley is fully healthy, and we blame a lot of his lack of production on his situation, what percentage of Christian McCaffrey could Barkley be? Could he be 70% of him? Could he be 80? Or is it far less?
I mean, Liz, you know, when Christian McCaffrey went to the 49ers, there was that old injury stigma attached to him because of his early career in Carolina. And then he's completely unlocked in a way that we've never seen him before with San Francisco. And I think we could see similar. Now, I'm not saying he's going to give Christian McCaffrey type production. Like, McCaffrey's on his own level, but I think a good 80% of what we're getting, if he goes to the right offense and to the right system and the right offensive line. I mean, look what a guy like Gibbs is doing in that situation. And he was just a rookie, and he was sharing time with Montgomery.
So we talked at the top of the show about how teams that have won the Super Bowl have not invested in the running back position. And like you mentioned, the 49ers were close, and if they had won, that would have changed the narrative, as McCaffrey is extremely well paid for the running back position. But that said, I am still concerned for Barkley that some of the top teams are not going to shell out what Barkley may be able to get from another team. I think somebody will bid for his services, and I don't know that a contender is going to match an aggressive contract. Obviously, I think New York is the Giants are still the front runner, but the next two teams between salary cap need and maybe organizational direction. I could see him going to the Panthers, who had Chuba Hubbard and Miles Sanders. And I know they burned money on Sanders last year, but to give their young quarterback a chance, Barkley would help. I also think the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who were going with Rashad White as their lead guy. And I get it, he was fun for fantasy and all that, but his broken tackle rate is horrific. It has been 2 years running. I think those are a couple places. Quickly, and I know you mentioned these as you went earlier, just remind us the teams that you think that he could end up on.
Who's this? I'm sorry.
Saquon. I know you mentioned a couple earlier, but just kind of recap.
You know, I think Dallas and Philly are very much in play because of their running back room kind of being bare. And a team like the Houston Texans, like, to me, Barkley is going to be on one of those three teams. I just don't see him. Like, he's wasted all these years in New York. You might as well stay in New York if you're going to go to Carolina.
So
stay where you're at.
Yeah, so Barkley was what we consider a three-down back. There is one other player I consider a three-down back in free agency, and that's Josh Jacobs. But to me, it's a very big drop-off. Now, Jacobs is only 26 years old, so he's a year younger than Barkley, 5 years in the league already. And remember, Jacobs had that career year in 2022 when the Raiders didn't pick up his fifth-year option. And I was very concerned that he had trained over – aggressively to cash in for a deal that didn't come because they tagged him. And in that career year, which was 2022, he had 4.9 yards per carry. But if we take the 3 years that surround that, the 2 years prior and then last year, that 4.9 yards per carry becomes 3.84, sub average by far running back other than the career year. And last year, broken tackle rate, only 40th percentile. Yards after contact, 33rd, not good at all. Now, he's a very good receiver, Josh Jacobs is. He averages about 3 receptions per game over the last 3 years. His yards per reception, at least 7.2 in 4 of 5 seasons. And again, reliable goal line runner. No, I don't know what he wants in terms of money. I don't know what offers he'll get, but he would be a 3-down back that's available. What are your thoughts on Jacobs and where could he end up?
You know, Jacobs can end up going to a team, right? Let's say the Giants lose out on Saquon Barkley. Depending on how much Josh Jacobs values himself, I can see him in a spot like New York, who does want to use a one-headed monster at running back. I can see him returning to the Raiders, but the one team that really sticks out to me, And it's not like right, because like everybody saying, well, Saquon is obviously the sexiest running back, put him with Baltimore. But I think Josh Jacobs might fit that Baltimore Ravens mold a little bit, especially if they're moving off of Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins, or at least Gus Edwards. You need that in between the tackles guy who's going to go pick that touchdown up and pick that first down up. I feel like Josh Jacobs is a big upgrade over that.
Now, one place, and I don't think they'll do it because of when Dallas paid Ezekiel Elliott that big contract, that really stung them. That hurt their organization. But that said, if the deal is reasonable, I could see Josh Jacobs going to Dallas. Dallas tried Tony Pollard last year, and Pollard's a free agent we'll talk about soon. But we saw they didn't have a sustaining running back. What Jacobs would give them would be the best of both worlds. And again, I know his yards per carry has not been good in 3 of the last 4 years, but if Dallas views him this way, and with the passing game they have, they could use him as a runner and as a receiver, and not to take him off the field on third downs, you become less predictable. That's a possible dark horse landing spot. But again, I don't know that Dallas is going to go down that rabbit hole again. A couple more running backs I want to focus on here, 3 of them for sure. Derrick Henry, the big dog, entering his age 30 season. Now, we remember way back in 2019 and 2020, he was a 5 yard per carry running back. In the last 3 years, only 4.3. He has slipped a bit. Now, the Titans each year, the offensive line got worse and worse and worse. So it's not all on Henry for sure, but he hasn't been quite the player he was in his prime. No running back is. He has at least 12 touchdowns in his last 5 full seasons. The 1 year he broke his foot in 2021, he still had 10 touchdowns in 8 games. So he's like a lock for double-digit scorers. And that said, we looked last year, and we saw him giving up half or more than half of the snaps to Tyjae Spears. And Derrick Henry, despite playing half of the snaps, he still had 280 carries and 28 receptions. Now, what makes me bullish on Henry, especially on a 1 or a 2 year deal, and I know he's 30, he was still 77th percentile in broken tackle rate. He was still 86th percentile in both yards after contact and yards after the catch. I think Henry is still playing at a high level. Yes. And I think if he's on the right team, he could be a definite opportunity for a team to make a big run through the playoffs. Thoughts on Henry and where might he end up?
You know, I can see Derrick Henry in my number one landing spot is Dallas for Henry. It's because they were in the conversation to possibly trade for Derrick Henry, and they could bring Pollard back. We already know Pollard isn't the every down guy. At least he's not the early down running back. I think they go out and get Derrick Henry on a 1 or 2 year deal. You know, we've already heard Jerry suggest, hey, we're going to go all in this year. They're bringing Jimmy Johnson in as an advisor for what that's worth. We know Jimmy likes to run the football. And a guy like Derrick Henry, you know, behind this offensive line, I think we can get 1 or 2 more special years out of him. And if not Dallas, again, he's another guy that fits that Baltimore Ravens running style.
Let's move to Tony Pollard. Now, Pollard will be 27 this season. And man, life passes fast. You wouldn't think Tony Pollard is 27 years old. What we learned this past year, he seems best suited as a change of pace back behind a big running back, especially heavily used on receiving downs. He had a career year back in 2022 when Zeke Elliott was carrying the mail. And in that year, we saw Pollard with 232 touches, so a nice low number, but 1,378 yards and 12 touchdowns. Last year, the yardage was almost the same. The touchdowns got cut in half, but his touches went up by 75. He had 307 touches, only 1,300 scrimmage yards and 6 touchdowns. And that was after he had 5.2 to 5.5 yards per carry in the last 2 years at Elliott, 4.0 last year. And his yards per reception, those went down the tubes as well. He was between 8.5 and 9.5 yards per reception in the two prior years. Last year, Tony Pollard, only 5.7 yards per reception. So right now, I don't know what kind of money Pollard's looking for. I don't know how teams view him, but I think they're going to view him as a change of pace runner. And that's going to be interesting. What are your thoughts on Pollard and where could he end up?
You know, Pollard needs to be a change of pace back. That's where he's comfortable. He can't be taking that beating on his body. So where are the best spots for Tony Pollard? Yeah, there's a world where Dallas brings him back, but they won't bring him back into that number one role. They're going to bring him, Tony Pollard, back and possibly another veteran. But outside of Dallas, I have two interesting landing spots. Number one, possibly the Chargers. I can see the Chargers working depending on what they do with Austin Ekeler. And the other one is a team you mentioned before as a change of pace back to Rashad White. I could see Tony Pollard possibly in Tampa Bay as that change of pace guy. Remember, Tampa has been trying to bring in a primary pass catching back. I think that it was Chase Edmonds 2 years ago, and obviously that didn't work out. I forgot who they had in there last year, but Tony Pollard would be a nice fit in Tampa.
That's a good, very, very good call. Tampa Bay would be a good landing spot for him. Also, when we talk about Tony Pollard, and you mentioned the Raiders and your pre-notes about a team he could end up with. And if the Raiders are going away from Josh Jacobs, and if Pollard is going to command a contract that's a pass-catching change of pace role, he would be a great complement if Zamir White's going to take some early down carries. They're going to need some juice in the passing game, and that could be a really good way of going that route. Not sure what they'll do, but that's a place. I like that idea that you had there. Let's talk about one more running back before we get some other positions. Austin Ekeler. Age 29 season. He comes off a career low 3.5 yards per carry, which is almost a full yard lower than his last three seasons. Now, we could say he had the week one high ankle sprain last year, and he came back in week 6. Now, he did have 3 great fantasy games in weeks 8 to 10. But now there are a lot of external circumstances because A, was the ankle not right? B, is it that, well, they lost Mike Williams in week 3, so the downfield game was gone, and then eventually toward the end they lost Justin Herbert, so defenses were completely able to sell out. Now, here are some numbers I want you to think about with Austin Ekeler. As a running back, his numbers were terrible. 29th percentile broken tackle rate, 32nd percentile yards after contact. Now, what tells me the ankle was okay was after the catch. He was still 89th percentile in that realm. So what that tells me is he slipped as a runner, and he's been asking for years for early down help, and he never really got it. They tried, but nobody was any good. But he still brings the chops as a receiver. And I think ultimately at age 29, he is going to be a turbocharged receiving back, but I don't think a team wants him to have more than 125 to 150 carries on the ground. Thoughts?
You know, Ekeler to me, like if you put Austin Ekeler and Derrick Henry were right around the same age and you ask me, okay, which one has more special left in them? I say Derrick Henry. So Austin Ekeler is very much landing spot dependent for me. And so like, you know, if he's going to be number 2 somewhere, I could see a team like possibly Chicago. They have a nice backfield, depending on what this offense is going to look like at quarterback. Maybe you have Roschon Johnson as the early guy. You want to add some more explosiveness, because I can see Chicago going quarterback, getting a wide receiver in that first round of the draft. You already have Roschon there, and then you sign Austin Eckler. All of a sudden, this offense looks locked and loaded. I think that would be a really nice spot, especially with this pass-catching prowess for a rookie quarterback, or even if they kept Fields. Eckler's a really nice piece. And another spot, I think an under-the-radar landing spot who we're not really talking about, so Green Bay Packers, I believe A.J. Dillon's a free agent. There's even reports that they're going to ask Aaron Jones to take a pay cut, or they could potentially release him, which opens up a big-time running back need for a team that likes to utilize the multi-purpose running back.
Aaron Jones will be praying that the Packers tell him to take a pay cut and release him so he could go to a place that'll actually use him, because I still believe Aaron Jones is one of the best running backs in the league. He has been unfortunately underused in Green Bay, so I would love to see that happen. All right, very quick hit before we get to the receiver position. I do want to make a quick point on DeAndre Swift. DeAndre Swift had week two. He was great. Other than that, not too many great games. Most of his games were 60 to 70 yards. He had a 90-yard game down the stretch at the Giants on 20 carries. He ran behind a great offensive line. He was only good. 48th percentile broken tackle, 49th yards after contact. And look, DeAndre Swift's vision is terrible. He get to the first hole, but when he's making a move beyond that, he does not read defense. I think he's a rotational back at best. Do you think there's going to be any interest in DeAndre Swift?
Depending on where, right? There's going to be interest. I like DeAndre Swift more than most, and I think we saw a lot of good out of DeAndre Swift. Staying in Philly is probably his best bet, but how about a team like the Cleveland Browns, where, you know, that Kareem Hunt role, that can possibly be the DeAndre Swift role behind
that too,
behind Nick Chubb.
You know, that's a good call. I could totally see them looking, because they did bring Hunt back in. I know that was after the Chubb injury, but and Jerome Ford obviously was a good pass catcher. But if you want to add some electricity in there, that could be a way to go. All right, we're going to get to the receivers, and this is going to be an anticlimactic segment. So we're just going to start this out. T. Higgins, Bengals franchise tagged him or plan to tag him, so he's off the market. Status quo for Higgins goes back. Michael Pittman, the Colts GM Chris Ballard has already said Pittman will be franchise tagged or signed to a long-term deal, so Pittman's off the market. And then Mike Evans, as the day we record on Monday, March 4th, we found out that Mike Evans signed a two-year, $52 million contract to return to Tampa. So the three biggest names in the wide receiver market are off the board. So Anthony, we're going to go to what my remaining top name is, and it's Marquise Brown. So Marquise Brown will be 27. Now he's 5'9", 180, but we've learned he can play outside or he can play inside. He's missed 8 games over the last 2 years. We don't like that for a smaller receiver, durability. And his yards per reception over the last 3 years has been down. And obviously he went from Baltimore, where he was used on more shot plays, but in Arizona, not quite the same. So he's been between 10.6 and 11.3 yards per reception the last 3 years. So he hasn't been the game breaker we want him, but he has shown that when he gets targets, he's in great shape. He can be a very productive receiver. What are your thoughts on Marquise Brown, and where could he potentially end up?
You know, we already, I think we know who and what Marquise Brown is. Speed threat, downfield threat, not really an alpha, can't really run the full route tree. So what's the best landing spot for Marquise Brown? And I kind of have him pegged going right back to Baltimore. Ideally, I think that might be the best fit for him. They do need another wide receiver, as I said earlier in the show. And Marquise Brown back there. What about Marquise Brown, depending on how much money he's going to command on the open market, to a team like the Buffalo Bills?
Oh, man, that's another good spot. The Bills, the Ravens are great spots. Atlanta, if depending what they're doing with quarterback, you got Drake London, big body. You got Kyle Pitts at tight end. But if you want to get some speed in that equation, they've got a lot of money in Atlanta. They could go that route. The Giants have been desperate for speed, but I think they need more of an alpha type than a Marquise Brown. And look, if there's not a hot market for Marquise Brown because of his size and his injury history, I could totally see him going to the Chiefs on the cheap. That would be fun. Calvin Ridley's next. Ridley is going to turn 30. Like we said, sometimes you look at these players and you blink, and I know we lost a year and a half of him between, I know he had some mental health issues the one year, and then he had the suspension the next year, and turned the clock, and we're looking 30 years old. Now, Ridley was in a weird situation with Jacksonville. The offense was horribly run by Press Taylor. Ridley was often not used optimally. There were games where they put him in stack formations. There were games they put him in motion, and we saw productivity when they used him. Then there were games you just let him hang on the outside and just wasn't working. They couldn't get numbers out of him. And he was only 15th percentile yards after the catch. Now, he wasn't like an only a downfield guy. I would almost write that off there. But remember, the one thing that I questioned about Ridley going back a few years was when he was without Julio Jones for that five-game stretch. It was the first time he was the guy. And I wondered, could he be the guy? Now, we know the book on Ridley last year. He had a few big games, and he had a whole lot of duds. Matter of fact, there were four times he had 90 yards in a game. In three of those games when he had 90 or more yards, Ridley followed up with 40 yards or less. So he couldn't string games together. One time, there was one point he had a 103-yard game with two touchdowns, and he came back with an 89. Other than that, you never got 2 weeks in a row out of him that went well. What are your thoughts about Ridley turning 30, and where might he go?
You know, I was overzealous on Ridley. I was overzealous on the pairing with Jacksonville and Trevor Lawrence last year. I really thought we were going to see something special, and we saw flashes. But I think what I really saw more was a reality when it comes to Calvin Ridley, that maybe he's not a true number one wide receiver. And maybe he does need a little bit more of a semblance of a supporting cast around him. The biggest thing with Calvin Ridley now, couple weeks ago, if you asked me, okay, well, you know, you had Evans and Higgins wasn't tagged yet. How much is Ridley really going to command? But all of a sudden now, Calvin Ridley is like a top two wide receiver on the open market. So he might be a little bit more costly. But again, a team like the Chicago Bears, who knows what they're going to do in the draft? But whether it's Fields, whether it's Caleb Williams or another rookie, they do need another wide receiver opposite DJ Moore. I think Ridley could potentially work there. And depending on the whole situation, we got to talk about the New England Patriots, who I think they go in a completely new direction and try to really get this offense right. And you can't get the offense right without adding wide receivers. And historically, Robert Kraft, we've seen him add veteran receivers, like guys like Randy Moss in the past, you know, Juju more so recently. So Ridley to the Pats, I think, is in play as well.
So we're going to very quickly dust over some lower profile free agents, probably 30 seconds or less on each. Darnell Mooney, I know, has been terrible with the Bears. He had the great year in 2021, went over 1,000 yards. He was the guy, and he played well. I do think that the team held him back. I think that if Mooney signs a cheap deal, either at Kansas City, the Chargers, or Buffalo, I think he could be better than we think. Quick thought on Mooney.
I don't know who Mooney is, right? He had that one really nice year, and then we haven't really seen him follow that up. I think it was more of a system and quarterback situation, more so than a Darnell Mooney situation. So, you know, again, I group him with those teams to where, hey, maybe the Bills or maybe the Chiefs throw him a contract, depending on how expensive or really how cheap he is.
Last player I want to focus on, and I know a lot of people will dismiss this player right away, and maybe rightfully so. DJ Chark's going to turn 28 years old early in the season. Last year, he played 15 games. It tied his career high. It was good to see him durable, but the only game he was really worth much is when Andy Dalton played, and he had a good game in that kind of big fantasy game. He had a couple drops in there, but all that said, when he was on the field, DJ Chark, a couple of years ago with Detroit, he had a number of solid performance games. So I think he can play well if he's in a situation where he's not the number one, but he has a really good quarterback around him. Durability issues for sure. Anything DJ Chark?
Yeah, he's going to be a piece, right? And he's the type of player to where, depending on, again, I keep going back to Baltimore because they do need a receiver. I keep going back to guys, to contenders like the Chiefs, like the Bills, who have some salary cap restrictions. I can see the Moonies or Sharks of the world going to one of those teams. Or how about really under the radar, if the 49ers decide to trade Brandon Ayuk, he's a really nice, cheap replacement.
Oh, that's a great, great call. Could totally see a team-friendly deal going to the 49ers. Wow. But he will be on the cheap, too. It'll be a very low contract. Yeah. Love that call there. And when you mention that, if they want to add some pop to go with Justin Herbert, I don't know how much they're going to throw, but again, they put him with a star quarterback. Put him with Joe Burrow. So when you mention that, now I'm thinking if he goes to a place with a star quarterback as a piece, we could get some as a piece. That's all we're talking. We're not saying DJ Chark's solving anybody's problems, but he's talented enough. If he's spotted well, it could work. All right, tight end position. Dalton Schultz entering his age 28 season. He had a career year back in 2021, which a few years ago, 808 yards and 8 touchdowns, 104 targets. And then the other 3 years that surrounded that, 2020 and then 22 and 23, very similar numbers, right around 60 catches, right about 600 yards on the nose, right about 5 touchdowns, gets 88 or so targets. So very steady. He's really a catch and fall guy for the most part. He doesn't get yards after the catch, 41st percentile. He's okay, middle of the pack, but a little below that. He's had a great situation with Dak Prescott and then CJ Stroud. Thoughts on Dalton Schultz?
Dalton Schultz is a good player. He's never going to be mentioned with those elite top end tight ends. But in the right situation, he's really been in the right situation, whether it was Dallas or last year in Houston, he could be a really nice piece of the offense. And if I'm the Houston Texans, I'm not letting him leave that building. I think he's a nice safety blanket, has a rapport with CJ Stroud. We've seen some nice games out of Dalton Schultz as well, and a really nice, solid fantasy piece. He's been a tight end, one in fantasy points per game for the past 3 years.
So the last one I want to talk about here, and I don't even know what his market will be, Hunter Henry. Hunter Henry has always been a very good blocker, a very good route runner, a very good red zone presence, and I believe a very good receiver. However, when he was with New England, he just got caught up in an offense that was never going to utilize him optimally. Remember early on in his career, it was still Antonio Gates was still with the Chargers. Yeah. And though he lost out on some time, but whenever Henry is used, he's productive. I mean, the yardage wasn't great in his first 6 years between 478 and 652 in the yardage. But again, it's lack of usage. He doesn't get that elite tight end usage. He's going to turn 30 at the end of the season. Even last year, 14 games, 42 catches, 419 yards, 6 touchdowns, only 61 targets. So that's about 4+ targets a game. Not much. And yet he was still fairly productive. Now, the yards after catch were horrific last year. But again, I think it's more Bailey Zappe and Mac Jones than it was anything else. He did show in the first 3 games last year they used him. 51 to 56 yards in all 3 games. He had a couple touchdowns in those first 4 weeks. So all that said, any interest in Hunter Henry in the market? And could he end up somewhere and be a piece?
He'll be a piece somewhere. And the two teams that really stick out, number one, the New York Jets. I think staying in division, they need some more pass catching help, right? Because like it's just really Garrett Wilson, because like Lazard, who the hell is he? I think Uzomah, I don't even know if he's a free agent or they make him a cap casualty. Conklin's nice, but I think the Jets could use an upgrade at tight end. And why not back with the Chargers? The Gerald Everett project, it is what it is. You already said it earlier, Justin Herbert needs some more pieces around him. I think going back to Los Angeles would be a nice fit. And plus, like Harbaugh, even when he was in the NFL in San Francisco, I think Vernon Davis was the tight end. So you really need a reliable tight end, I believe, to do what he wants to do.
Absolutely. That's a great call going back to the Chargers. You could totally see that one happen. Well, everybody, make sure you're checking out RotoWire Twitter, RotoWire NFL Twitter, for video analysis as NFL news breaks. And news will be breaking throughout the week. Franchise tags will be coming up. Next week, when we have more shows, you'll be hearing more about players signing. Thanks for listening, and come back next week for another edition of the RotoWire NFL podcast.
See you next week.